My name is David Holtz, and I want to welcome you to Take Another Look. I'll be featuring some of the lectures that I've done around the country in the recent past. In re-listening to these lectures, I felt like they were more for the time we're living now, as we're experiencing one of the greatest shifts and transformations on this planet. I hope that the subjects that I cover on these lectures will cause us all just to pause long enough to take another look. Based upon all the new information that we have, it is time that maybe we update some of our old beliefs. Now, we take you into a lecture already in progress.
Okay, well, as I said in my little prayer, I really thought, I don't know if this is what I want to do or not, and I've had a shift in perception. as I have prepared for this class just a little bit, I've thought, wow, this really is good stuff. But you that are drawn to it and will continue to come are initiates or candidates to do the deeper work. I'm not sure that I see spirituality or even as a community as just a feel-good thing. I've always said that what we call churches or communities or whatever we call ourselves here, it says out there on the sign we're a spiritual community. So that's what we will be. Should come for the purpose of finding space of doing inner research. Not to just be told what to think and told what is right and what is truth. That is not what the leadership is about here, as far as I'm concerned. It should not be, and I don't think it is. It's here for contemplation. It is here to awaken some of your own inner processes, to drive you into your own experiences, to come up with the truth that is for you. Now, I realize in organized religion, it's about the absolute as the truth, based upon a creed or a doctrine or a dogma. This is what we believe. If you will choose to believe what we believe, then you can be a member of this group. And everything from catechism to all the other ways in which we do. Now, Unity also offers classes, but they're very light in the sense of telling you what Unity is about, where it came from. It's not really a way of trying to give you an exclusive dogma to believe in. I would feel that the Fillmores and the early fathers and mothers of New Thought wants us to build upon their experiences, not to let this be the end to all, but the means to something new and exciting that we can co-create together. And we certainly, in the midst of all of that's going on in the world, there is, in the midst of that, a wonderful opportunity of a breakthrough of an energy in which we can create something fresh and something new. And that's where we're stepping up, I believe, to be able to be a part of doing that. But there's a saying in the Bible that Jesus said, and that is the Son of Mankind, must descend before one ascends. And most places start where they are to ascend. And that can take you on a euphoric mental journey. And I'm not looking for what's euphoric. I'm not looking for God as a drug, which is one of my favorite books of all by Father Leo Booth, When God Becomes a Drug. I read that many years ago. I called him. I brought him in as a speaker. And he's a funny guy, but he works with AA and many things. But his thing is helping people to recover from old traditional fundamentalist type of thinking. And that book, I thought, man, everybody I know that came out of an exclusive religion ought to read this book, because it was so good how that we can use God as a drug to escape euphorically, just as we use medicine and drugs today. Hello. That's a very popular one. I hear that one so much. Okay. No, it's all right, it's all right. Everybody please turn your... You just helped me to remind me. So anyway, what was I saying?
You were talking about the father in his book, Funny Guy.
Oh, yeah, and Father Booth, Leo Booth. And I was always so proud of myself being a pastor in the 60s when everybody was in the drug culture and doing LSD and getting high. And I was so proud and felt so holy because I wasn't doing that. But at the same time, reading the book, I realized I was getting high. You know, I came to church on Sunday. I got high euphorically. And if you're from a background, I am, of Pentecost, they use the rhythm, the music. The whole thing is about lifting you into a place in yourself where you just feel like you conquered the devil. You've conquered everything, and it's wonderful. And then by Wednesday, it wears off. Mm-hmm. And you crash. So you come back for Wednesday night prayer meeting so you can get another dose of it. But in between, when the drug wore off, nothing had changed. So we're looking for something a little deeper than that. We're not looking for an escape, I hope we're not, of a euphoric thing and the idea of just positive thinking. I love positive thinking, but it can be euphoric sometimes. And we want the real deal. We want all thoughts of spirit are positive. We don't have to think positively about things, but the spirit will be positive about how we see things. So anyway, this is interesting. I did get the books. It's up to you. Again, this is someone who has left the planet in the last couple of years, and I don't know why I seem to get their stuff to continue on, but that's seems to be my calling to do that. This is the book that we'll be speaking from. It's Forgiveness in Jesus, A Meeting Place of A Course in Miracles in Christianity by Kenneth Wapnick. One of the reasons I was leery about the class is because we do have A Course in Miracles class that goes on here every Thursday morning with Helen as a facilitator. And so I went to Helen Sunday and told her what we were doing and asked her if she knew Kenneth Wapnick, and she did not. And it's just interesting that people in the Course does not know Kenneth Wapnick, because he was there in the beginning with Helen and Bill when all this happened. He's a Jewish psychologist and was very much a part of it, but kind of went on his own from them and developed his own center eventually in Upper New York City, where he had a place. So you can read about him. There's his picture on the back of the book. But this is going to be a little differently in the sense that we're not sitting here and reading the Course in Miracles book. That you can go to Helen's class or get your book and read it. Now, for me, things don't work that way. Even the Bible. I never was one to sit down and start Genesis 1 and read to Revelations 22. I wanted to find out the answers to subjects in my life. And therefore, I asked the Holy Spirit to give me the scriptures that I needed to do that. I've sort of been that way with A Course in Miracles. I've never sat down and just tried to read the whole book all the way through, because I'm not very linear. I don't do well linear. So I did read it, but I would sometimes find a subject that interested me and I'd read that. And I actually cut my teeth on A Course in Miracles by listening to many, many Marianne Williamson tapes. back in the late 80s, and she was speaking at Mile High in Denver, Colorado, before she became real popular. And people were going to my meetings and hers and feeding me these little cassette tapes, and I would listen to them and listen to them. So I learned a lot from her take of Course in Miracles, which has been very successful, by the way. She's done very, very well as a best-selling author, and of course has the power of Oprah behind her also, and in which Oprah practices A Course in Miracles. In her studio, Harpo Studio, they do a little bit of Course in Miracles every day. So a lot of people do that. A lot of people don't know that Barbara Streisand has also been introduced to Course in Miracles. Marian Williamson was able to make it into the stars and into that category. So it's out there, no doubt about it. So this book is basically coming from a more spiritual but psychological aspect. So what I'm saying to you is about delving into the depths of the human mind and the human psyche and understanding why we deal with the issues we deal with based upon such things as fear and guilt and so on and so forth. One thing that I like about what this class is going to do, it's going to help you to realize that your issues of guilt and fear, for instance, does not necessarily begin with you in your life, but it is very much collective. It is a part of the human experience of coming into bodies and then being taught to identify with the body realm. So the books are here. Again, because he's gone, they're rare to find, but I was able to find 9 of them, and I still can get a few more if the class grows and people want them. I'll have to ask $20 for the books. That's how expensive they were, so I'm just passing it on to you, $19.95 to be exact. So if you want one, you can. I'll just, and then you that want to wait and see, you know how it goes. I understand that too. So who wants one now? I'll go ahead. Okay. And you can pay later. Pay the office.
Pay the office. I'll leave that up to you.
Yes, me too.
There you go. You got one. Oh, good. All right. All right. So, you see mine. So this one's mine. How many here have taken or been in A Course in Miracles classes in the past?
Oh. I took it on the internet from
Marian
a little bit.
Okay, good. All right. I so appreciate what Helen does, but Helen, they just read the book. They're going through the book and reading the book. There isn't a lot of, teaching and discussing. And the Course says we all need to be teachers. That we're all teachers. That's who we are. We're not preachers. We should be teachers. Even we who are preachy and preachers should be at the same time teaching. And that's what I'm trying to do my best to do. Sometimes I kind of feel like I go upstream with it when they want to pull me back down to some feel-good little thing. But I enjoy the last few times that I've been able to get a little deeper into things that you can take with you in the sense of gnosis and knowledge, because it is power, no doubt about it. All right. The book begins with the dynamics of ego, whatever all that is. I'm going to give you an illustration of something. Let's see how this works. Somebody tell me what this is. Are you sure? Are you sure? Somebody else tell me what it is.
Plastic.
It's plastic, isn't it?
Something with 4 legs.
Something with legs. It's probably got some screws in it or something to hold it together. But really, is it a chair? Or do you just perceive this particular shape of plastic and screws as a chair.
It's called a chair.
It's called a chair because you were taught this was called a chair. That could have been, you could have been taught it could have been anything.
Cecilia.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Language makes a lot of difference.
Oh, absolutely it does. So I'm doing that because so many people, you know, the course begins with that kind of idea that you have to look at a chair or something and say, this chair does not exist. And people say, are you kidding me? You know, and at that point, a lot of people throw it away and say, this is ridiculous. I'm not going to go there. And I think that's the way the Holy Spirit weeds people out from who really is sincere about undoing their ego system and going toward a different way of looking at things from to a state of more reality. Where I think people confuse the word illusion, for instance, they confuse it more with delusion. And that's where people have trouble. They just cannot believe there is no chair. It does not exist. When they're looking at something, and in this world, a material third-dimensional world, there is something here. Whether it's, I mean, we could get down to past plastic and all that. I mean, we could get real quantum. We could get real quantum and say, well, everything's made of molecules and everything is made of protons and neutrons. I mean, we could get real technical and we could just keep, you know, breaking it down and breaking it down. But it doesn't mean that something is not here. So I'm not delusional in saying that I'm seeing something, but it's not there. Something is there. Where the illusion is how we perceive it. It's in the perception of something that we make illusion. So instead of anybody saying to me, oh, well, that's some plastic and, you know, I had to get you there, but immediately it's a chair. And what we've learned in the past classes, what does the brain do? Does anybody know? The brain generalizes. The brain generalizes. It just sees body. It doesn't see 100 trillion cells. It'll never say, I see a form of a body that's made out of 100 trillion cells. Yeah. It never sees what makes things what they are. Okay? So I just wanted to kind of explain that to you and get that kind of off, that illusion is within the perception of something. Okay. Well, this begins right out with the world of guilt. Guilt. And guilt is based upon whether it's conscious, unconscious, or subconscious. Now, this is what's going to be a challenge about teaching this, is the part of your brain that is very much where you live in. And that part of your brain that you have learned things. You have read books. You have listened to CDs. You have listened to speakers. You've been to workshops. And you've gathered a lot of knowledge and information will challenge some of these statements. Because it's going to want to reject it and say, no, I've worked through that. I'm fine. I'm a happy, great person. I feel good. I'm positive. And get us to try to ignore the deeper aspects of the human mind. In other words, sometimes what the brain thinks is not always truth for us. So for us to move beyond that, we have to get into areas that we have suppressed and that we don't even have contact with. So this course may help you to get in contact with that. So that means that you may feel some of these things. You may feel what guilt would be like if it's deep within us. But anyway, let's go into this and let's see how this goes. I'll just start reading here a little bit to get us started. Although psychologists may differ in their understanding of the etiology.
The origin of the word,
very good. Dynamics or descriptive terms, practically all would agree that the central life issue confronting people is the problem of guilt. Associated with our experience of ourselves as physical and psychological beings, guilt may be vicariously described as self-hatred, self-doubt, a gnawing awareness of inferiority and insecurity, feeling of incompletion, unfulfillment, lack, and belief in one's personal failure before oneself, others, and God. Now, think about what has driven you to be on a spiritual path. What has driven you to be here in this community and the other communities you've been a part of? And why everybody seems to be somewhat driven towards something, whatever it is. The Course says don't look at form, but look at content. So the form could be, for us, a more, for a better word, religious model. And we still present a religious model here, whether we want to say it or not. We're on the edge of Christianity, called by the Fillmores practical Christianity, but it's still within the confinements of Christianity. We speak the language of Christianity, and so on and so forth. We have, I believe, for what it's worth, a better take on what Christianity would be, but we're still within that, the confinements of that area. Most of us in this room, I don't know everyone's individual backgrounds, but I'm sure we've had some connection with Christianity, being raised in this culture and in this country, that at some level we are touched by the Christian belief and dogma, directly or indirectly. It does influence our politics. It does influence a lot of the things that every day influence our thinking, whether it's on controversial subjects as abortion or migration or whatever, sexual orientation. It doesn't matter. But most people have an opinion based upon what they've been taught from a more Christian biblical point of view. So we can't hide from that. Unity should not be a place for us to stick our head in the sand and say nothing else exists. I found a place to escape to. We're not here to escape. We're here to extend light and love into the world. Now, to me, that does not mean taking on every human being. Now, that's just me. I just believe if I dedicated myself every waking moment of my life to go out there and try to take on everybody I could, I still would make hardly a dent within the human population of over 7 billion people. And I saw that in the churches in the sense of missionary programs. You know, they got a lot of money to missionaries. A lot of that money was good money that came in when people supported missionary programs to go over to Africa and to go places like that. Now, I'm not belittling the fact that for those who were helped and blessed, I'm not sure everybody was blessed by it, because I think sometimes they were more, I'm using the word brainwashed and not the way I like to use it, but brainwashed into a lot of fear-based dogma and doctrine. So anyone that was blessed or helped, I'm for that. That's great for that, those individuals. But you know, what's going on in the world today has reminded us that we are so connected as a global species. I mean, there's never been a more time than we have to face this idea of this tremendous global connection that is driving us to work more in the collective consciousness. And I believe that's where the work should be, mostly, is working within the collective consciousness of the planet itself. We have to change the collective. I don't know how to say it, the collective consciousness. That will then show up in individuals who are at all willing to change themselves. Right? Of course, it's just give me a little willingness, or all you have to do is say there's got to be a better way. That's all it takes. That is the simplicity of perplexity, of complexity. That is the simplicity of complexity to me. Right there. That's the most simplest thing I can give you, is to say there's got to be a better way than this, or I'm willing to change my life for the higher good. If you do one of those two things, you'll open the door, and the Holy Spirit will begin to work with you at some level. He will send, the Holy Spirit will send the right books your way, the right people your way, whatever it takes to offer you what it is you need to make those kind of changes, basically in your life. So, again, I want to be clear, I'm not putting down programs and committees and those who are out trying to feed people that are hungry. Good for those who are fed, but it does not take care of the hunger problem that's going on in the world. Right? That doesn't eradicate hunger, but it helps individuals, and we should do that too. That's part of what we do and what we do here. There is an outreach to help individuals who we can, within the confinement of our abilities and money and talent and availability, we reach out and do that. But what I'm looking for is those who will step up and say, let's come through the back door. I call it the back door of consciousness. This is why I think the Bible speaks of this coming of this thing called Christ consciousness into the global mind as a thief. I always thought that was the oddest thing as a kid. Why would Jesus come like a thief in the night? Then I understood. Because it goes on and says, if the man in the house was ready, he could out-analyze what was going on. He would over-analyze it. That's what we call your ego mind. Your ego mind is the sometimes, and I'm not against being rational, but the over-rational part of the mind that over-rationalizes everything based upon the past knowledge and information that we've learned from the past. Okay? So, to get past belief systems, I mean, what separates us? What separates on this planet? Religion and politics are the first two things. First two things that you don't want to really be asked, some of you, because you know you're going to get in, especially in this part of the country. You know, I mean, we live in a more conservative state, and the government is very conservative. And, you know, you probably don't want to get into it sometimes. But when people start asking you and saying things like that, you know, that can show you how separate you are sometimes. So what I'm trying to get to is the fact that I think the work has to be within the collective unconsciousness. So what Lawrence heads and does, knowing him as I know him now in our conversations, he has that understanding and vision of not just having a few people come in his class and do peace work for any one particular thing. I know the area, but I think he understands the collective aspect of it, of moving the vibration, the intent of peace into the collective unconsciousness. When it gets into the collective unconsciousness, it will be available for anybody who wants it, including ISIS, including those who are doing the most horrible of the horrible things on this planet. They do have an opportunity to rethink their position, and there will be a way for them to change that. Okay? And that's all we can do. We can't go there and convert them. I don't know how many of you have a more radical, say, Muslim or any fundamentalist. It could be a Christian fundamentalist. But I'll tell you, they're tough. They are set in their way. They are not ready to change. They are on the defensive with you. They've got their scriptures together. They are ready for you. That's what I'm talking about. So there has to be a better way to get to that person. And that is through the back door of consciousness. All right. So, let's look at this a little bit. So, guilt basically takes the form of our inferiority, our insecurities, feelings of unfulfillment, and personal failure. I don't know anyone at some level who has not at least tapped into some of those feelings about themselves. I'm not saying there's not, but there are, as a whole, most people deal with that. I deal with that with every tuning that I come to. There is something comes up based on some of these ideas of feeling unfulfilled, feeling insecurity, feeling inferiority, or self-low esteem shows up, or that type of thing. And of course, what the ego wants you to do is to own it, that you are the cause of it. You're the one who has got yourself in this mess, and if that doesn't work, then it wants to project it on someone outside of yourself, like your parents, or like anything. In my case, it could be religion. My childhood religion, you know, is all my problems. So that's called projection. All right? So what this has helped me to do is to realize that just being born, just the process of birth itself, is the etiology of all our neurosis. So that means this is the Course of Miracles correction and answer to original sin. Actually, original sin is being born. And we'll get into that and why that happens. And this is from the analyst Otto Rank. Placed great emphasis on his early work and significance of the birth trauma of the moment of birth. And we'll get to that on page 25 in just a moment. But let's go back. Each of us is more than familiar with the feeling guilty over things in the past. The history of our individual lives can be seen from this viewpoint to the litany of our guilt over what we have done or not done, said or not said, thought or not thought. We feel guilty because we picked on a younger sibling, were caught stealing candy from the neighborhood store, cut school to go fishing, watch a ball game, were punished by the teacher for talking in class or not doing homework. As adults, we feel guilty for being unkind to someone in need, having lost our temper, cheating on income tax, not being faithful to the commandments, failing to perform prescribed religious rituals, or harboring sexual feeling towards people forbidden by standards of morality. We all have to be honest to identify with all, if not most, of these kind of things. It's the human condition. Now, we're coming different from the other classes. We're not coming from the model of energy. We're coming from a spiritual model. And the spiritual model is basically in the confinements of a religious model. So we're going to take that on. Let's take on the religious model of spirituality. Because the Course of Miracles and the whole showing up of this voice called Jesus to Helen Schuckman was for the purpose of correction. Correction. I think you all know that there's a new book out now that's based upon the same voice called The Course in Love. and it's magnificent. And some are rejecting it because, again, we've fallen into the only thing there is A Course in Miracles. And that's not true. The Course in Miracles was the undoing part. The Course of Love is what we do about it after we've undone it. How do we live in the world as more love, and how do we extend it? It's great. It's as thick as this book to tackle, but I think it's going to come along, and somebody will take it like Marianne Williamson did and probably do great things with it. So, whatever. So, this list is endless. Yet despite the pain such memories and experiences leave in their wake, they are merely a tip of the iceberg. These specific instances for which we feel guilty reflect a much deeper and more generalized experience of unworthiness and inadequacy. Just as the greater bulk of the iceberg lies beneath the surface of the sea, so does this experience of guilt lie beneath the surface line that divides our conscious from our unconscious. So rather than just trying, rather than just trying to keep changing the conscious mind, I want you to get that. That's important. You can even take a Course in Miracles and change your whole mental belief system. In other words, you can have a different perception. And that is what? That is the whole basis of A Course in Miracles. Defining miracle as what? What does it mean, A Course in Miracles? What is a miracle? According to the Course. Really? A shift in perception. That is the definition of the word miracle, a shift in perception, of changing your perception based on fear and guilt to love. But the whole idea, if you get into the Course, is at some point to transcend perception itself. To transcend perception itself. So I'm afraid the Course just left us with a better way of perceiving things from a more spiritual point of view. But that's not the ends. It's still part of the means of where we're trying to get to. So I think what Wapnick has done is instead of just trying to change the mental construct from a construct built upon fear to a mental construct built upon love, he has tried to go more in depth. And that attracts me. Everything is not this way. You know, the whole cross thing. Looking at the linear. Okay, I learned this, now I don't believe that, now I believe this. I used to believe that, but now I believe this. And the ego says, well, good for you, you got it. Man, you say the right things, you believe the right things, but nothing has ever been allowed to show up past what we believe, what we affirm, how we think when people ask us. And this thing has never meant to become another religion. When this was so popular in Denver, where Marianne Williamson was coming, and I was going every month from Indianapolis, this was so all over Denver and Boulder, it was amazing. There was Course in Miracles groups everywhere. So somebody decided to form a Course in Miracles church. Well, that did not work very well at all. And I went there and I said, this is not at all what we should be doing, is creating another church model for A Course in Miracles. It was never meant to be that. It's clear in here that it's not to be that. But that's what people want to do. We want to package it. We want to put it in the confinements and make it the absolute of something. And of course, that has not worked. And there's other groups that have tried to do that, maybe not with churches, but with groups. And There was something called the ranch or something somewhere where people were going and moving to and living Course in Miracles 24 hours a day. It was a communal thing, and you know that went for a while and that fizzled out. And that's not what we're trying to establish here at all. So, Wapnick, coming from a more psychological aspect, tells us that the real work of undoing is below the tip of the iceberg. It's in the deeper aspects of things. And that's why I do like the symbol of the cross. I know Christianity has grabbed it to mean suffering, and I don't know that it doesn't. I don't know that the cross doesn't mean some kind of suffering. We do suffer as human beings. And maybe we need to go to the depths of that suffering to find out what it's about and find out how to undo the suffering by undoing the root and cause of the suffering. Okay? So this is what I think this is going to take us into. So just as the greater bulk of the iceberg lies beneath the surface of the sea, so does the guilt beneath our conscious and to our unconscious minds. It is a feeling so deeply rooted that we believe there's no way we could be free of it. For not even God himself would have power or desire to redeem us from the permanent burden of guilt. Now that's important, because I really think that a lot of systems are there to help you to deal with things. You know, if you go to AA and you're an alcoholic, what they do is they truly do and are successful help people to deal with alcoholism. But they don't take you away from ever being an alcoholic. You will keep saying 20 years later, I am so-and-so, I am an alcoholic. And that to me is no different than going to a fundamentalist testimony service and somebody saying, I am a saved sinner, saved by the grace of God. I have heard that. People be proud. I'm a sinner. I'll always be a sinner. I was born a sinner. But by God's grace, I am saved. So I am a saved sinner. It is kind of bizarre, isn't it? And that's one step for us in moving beyond that. But there's millions of people that are learning systems to help them cope with their suffering. What the picture of Jesus going to a cross would mean for us is the fact that we crucify or undo the causes of what causes the suffering. That's the crucifixion. The crucifixion is the undoing of what caused the sufferings in our life. And again, I want to stay on this today. What we want to deal with is not what we've individually done that's caused our suffering. Maybe that'll be different. But right now, we're going to deal with the collective very birth trauma of what it means to be born into bodies and then identify as a body without first knowing who we are authentically as a created spiritual being. Now, the person who would know that first and then could deal with the body would be fine. And when we get into this, you're going to see that this is exactly what happens. I think we're just going to go there, since I keep bringing it up. Go to page 25 if you have a book. It says, under sin, guilt, and fear at the bottom of the page 24, we return now to the world of guilt, which is a part of our personal experience. Accompanying these guilt feelings of abject failure and self-depreciation are those of being utterly helpless in the world that threatens and weakens and damages the image of ourself. We can appreciate this experience by looking at the beginnings of human life. Freud and the psychoanalysts have contributed greatly to our understanding of how far back in our lives these feelings of deprivation, bodily mutilation, and worthiness do actually go. Now, he was a Freudian psychologist at one time and left that and actually ended up somehow in a Catholic monastery as a Jewish psychologist, and then found A Course in Miracles, because neither one of them, the Jewish or the Christian, did not satisfy him at all until A Course in Miracles came along, and that's where he could integrate his being a Jewish psychologist and the idea of trying to study Christianity and Jesus all came together for him at that point. So he does tell us that there's things about Freud that has proven not to be so, but he says we shouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater, that there were certain aspects of Freud that actually has been a contribution to that. So I appreciate that. I appreciate anybody who doesn't say something's all bad and something's all good. There's just no such thing, very seldom, that we find anything like that. The wheat and the tares grow together, it says. So we have to discern. Somebody says you have to learn to eat the grapes, spit out the seed. So that is our responsibility, to always discern, check in with the Holy Spirit and ask, you know, what resonates with my inherent intelligence center that you all know about. So Freud and the psychoanalysts have contributed greatly to our understanding of how far back all this started. Otto Rank placed great emphasis on his early work and the significance of the birth trauma. All right. Until the moment of birth, the fetus has little or no awareness of itself as a separate being. It does not desire, since its basic psychological needs are instantly met. Now, we're going to talk about into the best of the process of nature. There's always exceptions nowadays, we know. But we're not going to deal with that. We're dealing with how, if things were done properly, followed by nature, when we bring a child, a body into the world, we're to take care of it. That's what nature would tell us to do. That's what we're wired for that. We're wired for that in our evolutionary self. So it does not desire, since the basic psychological needs are instantly met. In many respects, life in the womb is similar to the state of paradise described in the second chapter of Genesis, where Adam wanted for nothing. That is so interesting. All having been given by God, reflecting what the Course refers to as the principle of abundance. Now, if you want to know what abundance is, past money and fame and fortune and materialism, it is a state in consciousness in which, as the Course says, we need nothing. It is a state of our true, authentic beingness. You cannot be more wealthy than a person who knows and walks in their authenticity of who they truly have been created to be. If that was attained, nothing else would in any way affect us. If we were homeless, or if we lived in the biggest mansion, it would not affect our inner peace, our ability to extend love, to live in a state of joy and gratitude, because that's who we are. You understand that? The way we see it in the ego system is it's based on what I have, what I don't have, all the conditions. The world of the ego is based on condition. Now, anybody can have peace when everything in their world is going the way they want it to go. You're healthy. You've got plenty of money in the bank. You've got a good social life. You're looking good, feeling good about yourself. But if any one of those things collapse in any way, which is going to happen because this world is so temporal, then all of a sudden it's gone just like that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the state of being. So the Course calls this abundance. In a state without lack, there is no sense of separation or otherness. The Course teaches actually the ego began with the first question. The first question. Who am I and who are you? The minute the mind split and one part of the mind said, well, who are you? You're apparently not me. The mind split and the ego came from that. So, Scripture says Adam and Eve, before the fall, they stood naked, but listen to this, felt no shame in front of each other. Genesis 2:25. I love that. I mean, I love it from this point of view. In other words, always nakedness represents to me the authenticity of the pure self without the clothing of personality and persona. To stand naked means what you see is what you get. You are the real deal. You do not hide under certain personas that you wear like clothing and then you take them off when you get home. You can have it here. It's easy to have it in environments like this. It's easy for us to walk in that door and step into everything's great, hug, smile, wonderful, great, you know. And maybe you had a crummy week. Maybe you had an argument before you got here on the way with your significant other, or you got a terrible call from one of your kids or something like that, just really pissed you off. But when you walk in here, this is unity. Now, I'm not saying everybody does that, because our goal here is to be the real deal, right? But that means you were that before you walked in this door. You don't wear your spirituality like a garment. You don't take it off and hang it up after you leave here and you go home or to the job or to the grocery store. It's not worn like a vestment. So, I love his whole idea here, bringing this whole picture of Adam and Eve standing in their nakedness, not being ashamed as who we are when we're first born. We're fine. Somebody's taking care of me. Somebody picks me up when I cry. Somebody feeds me when I'm hungry. They want to play with me and goo-goo with me and change me. And they continue that for a while. There's even proof that a baby who sees the mother from the crib walk across the room does not even know at that point after birth, for the first year or so, that they are separate from what they see. They have no sense of separation yet. But something happens called the terrible twos. Now, that can happen earlier than two with kids now. Everybody's an individual. Yes, it can happen a lot later too. But there is something around that period of time in age, I would say in consciousness. I translate everything in age as in consciousness, because we all are born with a different level of consciousness. But there is a place in which the child gets more harder to deal with. You know, doesn't want to do this. And no wonder they cry. No wonder they act out, because they are experiencing separation.
This is David Hulse. I hope you've enjoyed today's lecture. Again, these lectures are lectures that were made in the last few years as I spoke and lectured around the country. But re-listening to them, I felt they were more visionary and more for the time that we're living today. With so much information, it is time that we look again maybe to update some of our old belief systems that are no longer serving us for our higher good. So we'll be with you each and every week at this same time on Take Another Look. We're also on bbsradio.com/SSS each and every week, 1 o'clock on Thursday, and always available on the downloads. On this podcast, we are interviewing some very wonderful people who are light workers, doing wonderful modalities, authors, and people who are bringing us present truth to empower us for the time that we are living. So until our next time, blessings, light, and peace.